Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show family meeting on WNYC, Growing Up Mixed. Call us up now if you're in an interfaith partnership or grew up the child of an interfaith partnership. This time of year, some of the thorny business of being in a mixed faith family comes to a head, right? Do you get a Christmas tree? Do the kids get presents for Hanukkah and Christmas? How do you explain it to both sets of parents and to your kids? We know that interfaith partnerships are on the rise in America, and we want to hear how it plays out with you. Call us with your conundrums, the surprises, your conflict resolution strategies, the benefits. We'll keep talking about what's funny about these mixed identities and your questions about being in a mixed faith relationship. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. What are the recurring sources of conflict? What are the recurring sources of comedy or joy? 212-433-9692. And our guest for this is Naomi Schaefer Riley, the author of the recent book, Till Faith Do Us Part, How Interfaith Marriage is Transforming America. Naomi, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And this is personal for you, we should say. You are Jewish, and you married an African-American man who is a former Jehovah's Witness. Yeah. And while maybe from the outside people might suspect that your racial difference would be the bigger issue, you write in your book that religious identity, even in a completely tolerant society, can and should be considered more substantively than racial identity. Why in your case?
Well, obviously, first of all, I'm in a faith-no-faith marriage, which I consider to be interfaith for the purposes of the book.
Meaning but, you're a Jewish atheist and you're...
No. I'm a conservative Jew, and my husband professes no faith currently. So it's not two different faiths that we're practicing, but I do think it has some of the same characteristics of people who are in marriages where there are two faiths at work. Obviously,
I
there
see.
Are
so
some,
he's
two
a,
competing sets of ideas.
He's a former Jehovah's Witness.
Exactly. But I think that we try to teach our children to not judge people by the color of their skin. But I think in terms of religion, these are often beliefs that people hold quite dear and for good reason. And I don't think that we should even be attempting to paper them over in some way. I think that these are substantive disagreements that people have, and they often and I think our society often tends to minimize them, which tends to sort of sometimes get people into marriages where they don't expect the conflicts to come up. And I suspect that this is something certainly that came up in my research, and I suspect it's something your listeners have probably experienced.
Well, let's start with Arun in Queens and see what he's experienced. Hi, Arun.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your interfaith situation?
So I am Indian, born in India, raised in India, immigrated in my teens. And my wife is white, and we just recently had a son, and, I'm Hindu, raised in a Hindu family, and she's Catholic, a very Catholic family. She's not a practicing Catholic, but her family's very religious, and so they want to, baptize our son and take him to, like, Christmas celebrations, but my parents, are sort of different. They want a very Hindu upbringing. So there's a huge fight between the in-laws all the time. But, what's interesting is
do
that
they talk to each other, or do they play this out through you and your wife?
They play it out through the both of us, definitely. But I was going to say it's an interesting sort of dynamic because on her side of the family, I feel as if my wife will disagree, but I feel as if it's sort of condescending. But on my side of the family, it's sort of, seen with an eye of interest. It's like, oh, he's half white, so tell us about Catholicism. Tell us about this. But on the other side, it's, oh, you just came from the temple. You know what I mean? It's a different sort of dynamic.
Right.
I see from
it's
both
curiosity
sides.
On the one side and
correct.
Fear or judgment on the other.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah.
And do the two of you, you and your wife, have unity on, how you want to raise your kids in terms of religion? And you just have to fend off the two sets of parents, or do you have your own conflict?
No, actually, it's very interesting between us. I'm glad you asked that, because my wife, she often says this. She often looks at my family sort of festivals, and she's like, "Oh man, I wish my side was as interesting as yours." And so she wants at our son to be raised, in a more Hindu sort of upbringing, because she thinks it's more interesting. It's a really strange dynamic, because she's sort of at odds with her parents and her side.
Right.
And so it plays out in really strange ways.
Your side more interesting. Arun, thank you very much for starting us off. And Naomi Schaefer Riley, does that strike chords that you hear a lot?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, it is very common, actually, that people have not decided on how they're going to raise their children before they have them in interfaith couples. I did a survey, a nationally representative survey of 2,500 Americans, and I found that more than half of people in interfaith marriages did not discuss how they wanted to raise their children before they got married. And you can see how that sometimes creates conflict later on. But I think what's also interesting here, it certainly seems to me more common from my interviews and also from the survey, that interfaith marriage is fostering a certain degree of tolerance in our society, that in this particular case, the Catholic parents are being exposed to Hinduism. And while it sounds like from this particular caller, maybe that's, you know, they're not welcoming it with as open arms as he would perhaps like, the fact of the matter is that Americans, the more they get to know people of other faiths, the more they like them. And obviously marriage, interfaith marriage, can present a very intimate experience for an extended family, that they get to really see up close what someone of another faith lives and worships and believes. And I think that, you know, sort of bodes well for greater tolerance in our society.
And I see that also in your survey, if you count Protestants as one faith, the interfaith marriage rate is 36%. That's up from 25% in 2006. So that's a rapid rise, and just 15% back in 1988. And it's becoming more common in every area of the country, you found, and for men and women, regardless of educational status or income.
Yes, I was very surprised by that finding, just how widespread the rise in interfaith marriage was. I think, you know, some people would think, oh, just more educated people are so tolerant, or, oh, you know, just people from higher classes are running into people of another faith. But really, it's everywhere. And I think, you know, again, I think this is certainly a sign of tolerance. But one of the other interesting findings is that it didn't matter also how particularly religious your family was growing up. I found that an equal number of people who said that they were very religious, people who said they went to church or synagogue every week, and people who had religious education were equally likely to enter interfaith marriages as they were to enter same-faith marriages.
Wow. Does that mean that a religious upbringing is as likely to alienate you as it is to make you strongly identify?
Well, I'm not sure that's the case. My hypothesis is actually that the one thing that did correlate with the likelihood you'd marry someone of another faith was the age at which you marry. And I think what's happening is, as we get married older and older, you know, we're spending more time away from our childhood faith. So even if you went to Hebrew school or went to catechism class or something, you know, you're not getting married until, you know, on average 27 for women and 29 for men. Those classes, that education and that family upbringing was so far away, you know, from the time decades ago, that it's hard to imagine how it would have a direct impact on who you marry.
Diana in Manhasset, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Brian. Long-time admirer. And Naomi, it's amazing. It's like, were you in my kitchen when my husband proposed to me? It's not uncanny. So I met my husband in school, Baruch. I'm Italian-American, grew up Catholic, went to 12 years of Catholic education. My husband grew up in Singapore, so he's also Asian and Muslim. And I, at the time, I'm embarrassed to say it, I never even heard of Islam. I mean, that's how sheltered. Anyway, long story short, I couldn't have children anyway, physically, but we did talk about adoption in advance of getting married, because mm-hmm. we had gone to pre-Cana conference, and the monk said you should talk about everything before you get married to make sure you're in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzy, my husband wanted to, if we adopted kids, his faith required that they grow up Islam, mm-hmm. and my faith required that they grow up Catholic. Mm-hmm. So we agreed not to have any adoptions of our own, but become the aunt and uncle for the extended family that you just referred to in your earlier comments.
Wow. So that is so heavy. The fact that you couldn't reconcile how to raise your kids, born or adopted, born to you or adopted, prevented you from raising a family at all.
Right. So, exactly.
I think it's
a mixed blessing. You know, I love that I have so much influence on so many kids, and my husband feels the same. But every once in a while, there might be a movie or something that makes me think, what would it have been like?
And it's really about your values and not necessarily what your religion, Catholicism, says officially, right? Because wouldn't Catholicism not even recognize your marriage to a Muslim?
No, yes, but we were smart and we got married by a Jesuit.
And they've now risen to the popehood. The papacy, I guess you say. But Naomi, what did you want to add?
Yeah, I was going to say that there's actually been in the Catholic Church some really interesting developments, I'm guessing probably since your caller got married, which is to say that the Catholic Church used to require that the non-Catholic promise to raise their children Catholic if they got married in the church. And the church would allow an interfaith marriage, but they made the non-Catholic make this promise. Now they consider that a violation of the non-Catholic's conscience. That was a development that happened Vatican II and in the immediate years post-Vatican II, and it took a long time for it to trickle down. But the fact of the matter is that now not only does the Catholic Church recognize interfaith marriages, but it also says to the Catholic, look, we'd really like you to raise your children Catholic, but we do not feel in good conscience that we can require that of your non-Catholic partner. So I think that's something that's really, you know, it's been a significant change both in the church and also in the United States, in the experience of Catholics. For Muslims, the rule is still the same, which is to say Muslim men can marry non-Muslim women. The reverse is not true. But if they do, their children, even if they marry a non-Muslim woman, their children are expected to be raised Muslim.
So if the title of this family meeting today is Growing Up Mixed, in that family's case, it's not growing up mixed. Ashley in Chatham, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your story?
So I'm a Jew who was raised by a predominantly Catholic family. My mother's second marriage and husband was very Catholic, but she chose to raise us Jewish in that lifestyle. And I've married a Quaker, and we're starting our family now. And it's actually interesting, we were both pretty secular prior to us getting married and starting our family. And now since we're starting one, we've both discussed and felt our pressure to bestow the cultures and the teachings of both of our religious past due to this very dwindling population of both of our religions that it's become an issue. many heated discussions about it.
Have you figured out how yet?
Oh, actually, well, it seems to be right now what we're doing is right now, the agreement is that the children will go to Hebrew school, because I've discussed that many of the teachings and culture that Judaism bestows, I don't know if I would be able to give in our household. But Quakerism has a lot of living lifestyle. I'm trying to think of the cult lifestyle. I can't even think of the word right now.
Benefits?
Yeah, benefits that are in the household greatly. So Quakerism, he thinks we'll be able to show how to live that every day. And the ideas and the cultures that I'd like to bestow for Judaism will be bestowed in Hebrew school, especially by learning the language and a lot of the traditions and everything with that comes with that.
Can I ask, since we're asking a lot of the callers today, even with all this thinking it through and, you know, everything you were just describing and how complicated it's been, is it ever a source of humor or comedy in your family, your mixed-faith marriage? Any recurring lines or jokes or ways you laugh about it?
Oh, my gosh, on a regular basis.
Such as?
Well, you know, our wedding, we always found it funny because some people were shocked. We could not have been more interfaith. We were a Jew and a Quaker being married by a Presbyterian minister. So for people that were fined, we are the best way I could say is for people who find we find humanity and faith to be most important, and so the definition of what the religion was wasn't as much for as important. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time describing what I want to say.
That's okay, but it's a complicated situation. And Ashley, thank you very much for being so candid about it. I think people definitely learned from your call. So, Naomi Schaefer Riley, author of Till Faith Do Us Part, How Interfaith Marriage is Transforming America. Some stats from your survey. Broadly speaking, Jews are the most likely to marry out. Mormons are the least likely. Muslims fall somewhere in the middle. And on Jews being the most likely to marry out, something that Ashley said, our last caller, struck me, that both she as a Jew and her husband as a Quaker are afraid that their religions are dying out. And that's one of the reasons that they both feel strongly about, passing it on to their next generation.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly true with Jews. At the extreme end of that, people say, oh, all this interfaith, marriage, people are doing Hitler's work for him.
Yeah. Well, that used to be a much more common refrain than it is now. But I think, it's definitely true. I think, many Jews do feel that pressure, the sense that, they need to be doing something to kind of save this relatively small population. And I think, you find that in other minority faiths. And I think a lot of people find that even if they're not in a minority faith in terms of the world, but in terms of America. So, I was really fascinating when I went to talk to Hindu leaders and some Muslim leaders about the deep concern about high levels of assimilation here in America. That, a lot of people are concerned about Muslim radicalization, but a lot of Muslim leaders seem to be concerned about secularization and assimilation. And it's not that the Muslim population worldwide is dwindling, but in America, Muslims are going through a very similar process to what Jews went through in the last 50 years. Not going to mosque, marrying out, children becoming less religious, less interested, and how do you sort of combat the American, the strong forces of American assimilation and tolerance, when you want to preserve many of the cultural and religious traditions.
Masole in Short Hills, you're on WNYC. Hi, Masole.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. And you have a question for our guest, I understand, yes?
Yes, I do. I was just saying that to the producer, I guess, that I'm in a very similar situation. I'm African, not African American. I was born and raised in Zambia, and my girlfriend is Jewish. And the only thing I wanted to ask was what kind of situations have you experienced that you found to be obstacles, or maybe I guess stumbling blocks in your relationship, and how did you resolve them?
May I ask you a question first? You mentioned your nationality of origin and her religion. What's your religion?
I was raised as both Catholic and Jehovah's Witness. So
uh-huh.
I was I stopped going to church after a while, I think in high school.
What do you identify as religiously today?
I would say spiritual.
Uh-huh. Generally kind of just personally spiritual or universally spiritual?
Universally spiritual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any advice for him, Naomi?
Well, I mean, I do think, like I said earlier, that, a lot of people sort of assume that religion is unimportant to them. But I think, what sometimes happens is later in life, obviously, when we get married, marriage ceremony is kind of the first thing where this issue really comes up. But especially with children, we have a tendency to kind of, when someone hands us this baby, like, oh, God, what do I do now? The first instinct, I think, is often to do what your parents did. And, are you going to have, a circumcision? Are you going to have a baptism? Are you going to, these questions, they start to come up. And a lot of interfaith couples, first of all, assume that, they're just a few big events. But I think, an interfaith couple really has to expect that this is going to be an ongoing discussion over the course of their marriage. Little things matter. Are we going to go to a Passover Seder? Are we going to, celebrate Ramadan? Is my non-Muslim husband going
going to fast for Ramadan? I mean, these are questions that come up with such frequency that I think interfaith couples often think, oh, well, we'll just decide how to raise the kids, and then the discussion will be over, and that'll be the end. But in fact, it really, I think, has to be an ongoing conversation, and you have to expect a lot of kind of little conflicts over the course of many decades.
In fact, before we run out of time, it jumped out at me that you wrote in the book that faith is a tricky thing that sneaks up on people. The death of a loved one, the birth of a child, the loss of a job, a move to a new city, all these things can give people a sense of religious longing, a desire to return to the faith of their childhood, so that people tend to revert more as they get older than when they're first married.
I think that's true. I mean, it's very easy for kind of young single adults, you know, we talk about emerging adulthood now. It's very easy for a young single adult to say, look, I'm unaffiliated and religion doesn't matter that much to me and I sleep in on Saturdays or Sundays. And you meet your mate at the point at which you're most secular. And then later in life, when you kind of want to belong to a community and you want to figure out a way to bring up your children in a particular community with particular principles, all of a sudden then religion does come back. And like I said, I mean, I think there are these other factors that can lead it to come back too, and you can suppress those. I mean, as an adult, you can say, okay, well, I married someone of another faith, so I'm just going to kind of skip over that part of my life. But I did interview many people who said, you know, look, I compromised on this, and I have to say, I'm not happy about it. You know, like, I'm glad I did for the sake of my marriage. I had to put my marriage first, but it did present them with feelings of, in many cases, loneliness, I think.
Naomi Schaefer Riley, author of Till Faith Do Us Part, How Interfaith Marriage is Transforming America. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, a Brian Lehrer Show family meeting today, Growing Up Mixed. After the news, we'll get into mixed political households. How do you survive that? And in the age of inequality, how do you navigate being in a mixed income home? On this Brian Lehrer Show family meeting, Growing Up Mixed. Right now, Richard Hake is here with the latest news. Hi, Richard. What's happening?